Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Full or part-time options, 518-454-5143. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
So we're going to have a great radio show here, folks. We're going to have the Media Project for you, and we will promise that it will be better than last week's show.
Why better?
There was nothing wrong with last week's show.
We should always strive to do better. That's all I'm saying.
I thought maybe you were saying because I wasn't here, it would be better now that I'm back.
I'm surprised that you thought that. Dr. Alan Shartok is here, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, and Ira Fussfeld, the Daily Freeman in Kingston.
Hello.
And I'm Rex Smith of the Times Union in Albany. We have the professor, the publisher, and the editor for you. And Rosemary's not here. She's off in Tahrir Square, as we say.
Oh, boy. Tahrir Square.
Yeah.
She's unbelievable, isn't she?
Very energetic and very brave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'd say
and
so.
Feisty.
And if you want to read her dispatch from there, the blog is on timesunion.com. And it's a very interesting sociological essay, I'd say, about what's going on there.
Rex, I want to tell you,
sir.
I wanted to compliment you on a new use for the Times Union.
A new use, oh
no,
boy.
No, it's not about wrapping fish. But I can tell you this.
Yes.
This morning, some fool came into the studio where I often do my early remarks mm-hmm. on the radio, mm-hmm. and he spilled coffee on the seat.
Ah!
And he really had to sop up the coffee from the seat, and he put the Times Union down there and sat on it.
Wonderful. There you go.
And it turned out to be a very effective way of, curing the coffee. Yes, it was very good.
I'm thrilled to hear
I wanted
this.
To thank you for that.
I came to a point in my career some years ago where when people said things like that newspaper.
Or wrap fish,
I said, fine, as long as you pay your 50 cents or whatever it is. Whatever you want to use it for, if you buy it, we're more than happy to have your business.
That's right. Actually, there's a funny spot last year by one of the British newspapers, a TV spot, showing a fellow sitting there happily reading on his iPad, and there's a fly buzzing around as his children are eating breakfast, and he gets this little devilish look in his eye, and he takes his iPad and crushes the fly, and of course the iPad is destroyed.
Yeah.
And the announcer then intones something like, there are some things for which only a newspaper is suited. And so I thought, now, is this really a good way to promote purchase of the newspaper? But, for whatever purpose, sopping up your spilled coffee or whatever.
Well, I may have told the story years ago. I came into my office on a Saturday, and this was before we had a Saturday paper. So there was nobody in the parking lot except me and I heard a car pull up, and I looked out the window, sort of like the guy in The Natural peeking out from behind the blinds. And somebody went to the coin box in the front of the building to buy the day prior's newspaper. And I thought, oh, isn't this great? And I watched as they took the paper and they went into their car. And what they turned to was not the news and all the great stuff we had written, but to the classified section.
Of
that
course.
Was my first lesson in people just don't buy the paper for the news content.
And I'm here, of course, to tell all you people who are under 50 years old that The Natural was a great picture.
it's classic.
You missed it.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I think that the people who listen to this program know exactly what The Natural is.
And that's right. And as long as you keep doing that kind of stuff, it's going to happen more and more.
Yep. Let's hear for the demographic
reference.
I'm going to talk about 50 cents.
I don't know. 50 cents. All right. So anyway, we have a couple of significant new reports out that we need to talk about. The first, of course, is the report in the UK, the Leveson report, that is from Lord Justice Leveson. You know, once you become a judge in the UK, they don't use your first name anymore. You're just Lord Justice something.
Yes.
We don't have that, even in the United States.
Yes.
The Chief Justice of the United States is known as John Roberts. But anyway, Lord Justice Leveson has issued a report on the press encouraging a tougher form of self-regulation backed by legislation to uphold press standards. He says that the press has, quote, wreaked havoc in the lives of innocent people for many decades.
There you go.
How about that?
And by the way, he's been subjected to some critical remarks over some of his past work. I know that. And maybe this is a little, you know, get even.
Well, we certainly wouldn't want the press to be critical of anybody in government, would we now?
No. Well, look, we have the First Amendment. So on the one hand, you have this very important thing that says, you know, you're not going to let politicians fool with the press. And it's a standard that we should all respect. On the other hand, every week I give you the worst of it, Rex. I say, you know, the New York POST.
Mm-hmm.
And they deserve some criticism for the apparent way in which they proceed to cover things. And it's just nothing but a stinking rag run by, you know, a bitter old man. So what can I say? Shouldn't there be some way? Now, you always come back and say, well, you can sue. Well, not exactly I can sue because, you know, you have to have a lot of money to sue.
You're talking about you can sue in the case of libel, but I think you're talking about something that may not be libelous, but is just irresponsible,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. But I'm also talking about all those people who feel that they've been libeled who don't do anything about it because, you know, they go to a lawyer and the lawyer says you have $50,000 up front. Mm-hmm. So that's mm-hmm. the issue. Now, in Great Britain, there have been successful libel suits, but only when the lawyers agree to take it in a way in which only if you win do they get paid.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very rare.
Look, the motivating factor for this report and this inquiry in Britain is what happened with the Murdoch papers.
Exactly.
And what happened there was reprehensible. I think most honest brokers of news would say so. And they have been taken to task, and where they've been legal ramifications, people have been arrested, and it will go through the courts, and they will be convicted or not. And to the extent that the public is outraged by what these publications are doing, they're going to vote with their coins. They're either not going to buy these publications or they are.
That's nonsense.
I think that to put the government in an oversight role, it leans itself to all sorts of problems down the road. Let's let the press be unencumbered as much as it already is, and let the public decide whether it wants to support it or not support it, because otherwise it's invariably you're going to have government interference where it should not be.
People are not going to vote with their coins, Ira. You know better than that. If they put a sexy lady with a short skirt and 9-inch heels on the front cover, people are going to buy the stupid
thing. So then citizens will be getting the media they deserve.
Exactly.
Right?
Just as they get the government they deserve based on who they vote for.
Well, the point is there anything between government supervision and industry supervision?
Uh-huh.
Some idea of some way to do this so that we can hold some of these cads responsible.
That seems to me what Lord Justice Leveson is suggesting, that is a tougher bit of self-regulation, that is, rather than a government regulator, a council of the media to a revamped PCC, that's the Press Complaints Commission, that would actually then have a sort of backstop regulator that can go a little bit more aggressively to penalize newspapers that step out of line. But even that, you know, if that regulator is funded by the government and if the appointment is made by the government, you really have a chance that I think we wouldn't have in this country because of the First Amendment. You have a chance that the government would, in effect, be regulating what the press publishes.
And we have had, Rex, you're the historian, the journalism historian here, but isn't it true that we've had these councils, we've tried them before?
Yes, we've had news councils in the United States, most notably in Minnesota. There was an attempt at a national news council in the 1970s that failed when the major news media, at that time CBS, was so dominant in news on television and the New York Times in print, they declined to participate. They kind of fell apart. But the idea of it was that there would be a body of volunteers who would review how the media performed, and by virtue of the reports they issued, that they would, the public pressure of pointing out where the media had failed to be responsible would be enough regulation.
But they didn't work.
Didn't work when the media declined to participate because of the chilling effect, they thought. I didn't think it was such a terrible idea. Seems to me that a press council of that sort where you're actually saying, okay, let's review. But, you know, it is easy for me to say that in the abstract. And once you start getting them coming down on you, or, you know, Alan, it would be easy for a press counsel to criticize you and to say, you know, WAMC shouldn't do some of this controversial commentary that you put on the air. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is offending people. Let's stop that. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't want that, of course.
And I still contend if you were irresponsible on this air, it would be reflected in fewer dollars during the fund drive. And if we were irresponsible in print, it would reflect fewer dollars in circulation revenue or in this digital age hits on our website. And it just makes me very nervous to think that there's going to be a government intervener.
You guys can't. First of all, I agree with that. But second of all, you can't have it both ways, Ira. I called you up short quite correctly. I called you up short for saying, you know, people will not give their quarters, so it's 50 cents or the $2.50, whatever it is now. And I said, well, nonsense, you know, the more trash you throw at them. You know, guys, I came into the legislative office building the other day, and on one side is a remarkable painting of the Marquis de Lafayette. Hmm. And on the other side is George Washington when you've come into the great legislative building. And I happened to see some students, and I said to them, does anybody here know who the Marquis de Lafayette was? And the answer was no.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knew. So I'm a little concerned about Ira's point that, you know, people will, your point, will they get what they deserve? No, we want to make sure they get what they really deserve, which is truth and history and, you know, honesty and the rest of it. And so you can't have it both ways. You can't say people will stop reading if you don't give them the good stuff.
Well, and here's the great fear, and it's elucidated in the second report that I thought we ought to talk about today, a report that comes largely from the Toe Center for Digital Journalism at Columbia, but it's written by a Columbia University professor, NYU professor Clay Shirky, and C.W. Anderson of CUNY. They call it post-industrial journalism, adapting to the present. And they make the point that we are really in an era when this report just came out this past week, and they're saying that the journalism industry, as we might call it, is gone. There is no industry to speak of. And they make the point that actually the result is we're going to have worse journalism for a number of years before it gets better.
What do you mean there's no industry?
That basically the power of the industry that is represented by self-sustaining newspapers and other media is evaporating, that it's only a matter of time. I mean, look at the cities all around us where daily newspapers are closing or certainly not going, not publishing every day. Syracuse, Harrisburg, Montgomery, Alabama, soon to be Cleveland, of course, New Orleans, and that the industry itself is evaporating. And while journalism would be more an individual practice rather than an industrial practice.
Well, it's also like the Yankees. I mean, you know, millionaires buy these. In fact, wasn't there a rumor around, Ira, you're the sports guy, that Murdoch...
Well, we talked about it briefly last week. He just bought 49% of the YES Network, which is the Yankees' own network. And there are people who believe that that's the first step to him buying the Yankees at some point.
I've never liked the Yankees, but now...
But the danger is if you lose the industry. I mean, one of the good things about having a powerful industry supporting journalism is that it has been able to stand up for freedom of the press, to actually fight as plaintiff to release information, to stand up to government when government tries to crack down on us. And if you lose that, if you only have individual reporters without an industry backing them, you really run the risk of losing some of that watchdog function.
This report that you're discussing, I haven't digested it fully, but I'm aware of it. It's written by several people who are particularly prominent in the digital transformation, including Emily Bell of The Guardian, who's a member of my company's advisory board. Mm-hmm. If I recall, they're actually suggesting that basic news stories could be written by computer programming.
90%, they say, of the stories.
Where I'm not sure I agree with your conclusion, although you may be right, is that the traditional newspapers, as we know them, they're saying because of those quote-unquote computerized stories or stories that are generated by the crowd, by, you know, individual people, that our role will be more interpretation and amplification on the news. And if that's accurate, that's also so obvious to most of us who already recognize that that has to be our role. If we, particularly those of us who are posting breaking stories all day on the website and then printing the newspaper the next day, we need to be unique in print, and that uniqueness has to be in terms of interpretation and amplification. So I didn't gather the same conclusion about the elimination of the industry, but as I say, it's a rather detailed report. I want to get more into it.
Well, Larry, you really have gone on that whole subject.
Yes, and it interested you.
Not
it wasn't
all.
About
not,
you.
Not at all.
It was nothing. I didn't mention Alan at all.
Not
How was
all.
Your vacation, Alan?
not at all, but I did want to go back to...
It's Rex. Only one of the more major reports in the journalism
yes.
business. I'm
well,
sorry.
The problem is that I always try to give the people the basics, and I didn't understand what you meant by computer-generated, Rex or Ira.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but in effect, it means that you have the basic facts of a story yeah. can be fed into a computer and it can write the story.
Well, give me an example.
There are programs now that write
sports
accounts
stories.
Of sports
yeah.
Games. You know, you feed in the stats and they can quickly spit out a story that is as good as most basic sports writers. And you can do that with crime stories as well. You just don't have to worry about the writing.
Yeah, so press release rewrites.
Well, why don't you give the people an example? So in other words, you gave us a subject sort of idea, but I mean, give us a specific story.
Well, we're not doing it now.
What would it look like? Somebody on the street in Albany?
Right. You could use, instead of having a reporters who have a sense of narrative structure and how they actually take information, and they, instead of having a reporter who can weigh, in fact, competing accounts and help give people truth, really, which does involve a human sensibility about where truth lies, you would have computers who would just say,
"Man was murdered
on column A and one from column B."
A man was murdered on Lexington Avenue.
Yes, or even if it's not crime, if you talk about politics that way, some people might say, "Well, that's great because the computer would be neutral. It would just give us what the Republican candidate says and the Democratic candidate." And I think that's really dangerous to the pursuit of truth. It's not a good idea at all.
Can any of us doubt that this is possible when the computer can win a game of Jeopardy? I mean, the technology is changing in such a rapid form that what sounds ridiculous to us today could be commonplace in 4 or 5 years.
Or the computer can drive your car and park it.
Yeah. Now, here's something you'll like, Alan. This is good news for
you. I doubt
it. It's that increasingly, though, what will be a differentiator will be not just the opinions or biases, but the personality, energy, and voice of the journalist. Quote, "The more we feel engaged with a journalist through his persona, the more we want to hear what he has to say about the world. A public persona was once the exclusive territory of the high-profile columnist. Now it is part of the job of every journalist." So there you go.
It's interesting because I'm old enough to have read the New York Times back in the day when Arthur Kroc wrote, and when some of these other guys did, or when Eric Severide, where the personality came on to. But
that was a personality?
I was just going to say, but it turned out he didn't have a personality, nor did Arthur Kroc, and I never knew what the hell they were talking about. So they were hardly personality-driven.
I just think that among the fears an old-timer like me, a print journalist, would worry about what we're already seeing happening with the cable networks that have staked out their positions on the left and the right, and that people are going to the networks that they agree with and are getting little else but what is on that network and what that point of view is. And it sounds to me like if this personality-driven journalism is where we're heading, there will be more of that. Because if Alan is going to stake out continually one position and I'm going to stake out another, and that's my personality and people like it and continue to follow it, are they going to follow us to the exclusion of everybody else? And where are people going to get all points of view?
And in fact, Ira, I assume there was a period at the end.
Yes, there was. I was waiting for you to say that one wasn't interesting either.
Yeah, well, the shoe fits. So...
So we didn't have this problem the last couple of weeks.
I understood that there were love fests.
People writing me saying, "Wow, what a wonderful show."
Yeah, exactly. Now that other guy is gone. Okay, but wait. This is so interesting because now Jeff Zucker, it looks like, may take over CNN, right?
There's
right.
some talk that CNN may be bringing Jeff Zucker. He used to run NBC. And would that then be a more personality-driven network? Would there be true crime shows or something like
that?
Well,
let's put it this way. CNN has not. It's done well. I mean, it's making money. No two ways about it. But they don't win the ratings.
They don't win the ratings because they don't come, generally speaking, from a point of view.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Okay, so Zucker comes in. What's the personality of CNN going to be?
Well, that's a good question. They don't want to be Fox. They don't want to be MSNBC. So what are they going to be? If they're not neither left nor right, they're going to have some kind of identity, right?
I think they're going to be MSNBC, but better.
Really?
That's what I think. I think, in other words, they're going to come in because there is something in this world called right and wrong. MSNBC is right, but it's gotten to be kind of predictable and strident.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, even people like me say, oh, you know, there it is again. So
what did you think? Did you see that episode involving Tom Ricks Fox, retired general, a military affairs expert, brought on in an interview and was being asked about Benghazi? And he said...
He gave them hell.
And he says, yeah, I think it was hyped. He says, by this network especially.
And they gave him 20 seconds and they took him off.
He said, I think the emphasis on Benghazi has been extremely political, partly because Fox was operating as a wing of the Republican Party. And that was it. They pulled him off.
How much time did they actually give him?
They gave him 90 seconds.
90 seconds, yeah.
But I had seen an interview with him and Howard.
God help us to tell the truth.
Well, he was with Howard Kurtz several days prior on the Sunday morning program that Kurtz does. And they had a very long interview. And he was vilified the media in general, Ricks did. So he's not happy and later on went on to criticize MSNBC as well.
Yes.
So, and a lot of the points he made are well said. Again, repeating what we've said, there's too much on the left, too much on the right, and nothing else in between.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And yet there is a certain understanding, I would think, that when you pull an expert into your studio and put them on the air, that you're going to let them have their say.
Well, I think they did. They underscored what he was saying by pulling him off.
Well, they did him a real favor because he only got 90 seconds, but now he's world famous for having done it. And Ira, when you say a point here and a point there, reminds me of an antelope, you know, a point here, a point there, and a lot of bull in between.
It's not a cantaloupe.
Very impressive. Very good.
It's an old one.
Write that down. Okay. Now, of course, we have the greatest moment in the media of the past week. It did not happen on this continent, in fact, nor in this hemisphere. It happened when the online version of China's Communist Party newspaper hailed a report saying that Kim Jong-un, that is the North Korean dictator, is the sexiest man alive.
This is very funny.
So that report, of course, came from The Onion. And I gather...
You better tell people what The Onion
that
is.
America, well, The Onion is the satirical newspaper now that has a major online presence. And I guess that doesn't translate so well. I guess satire is not a major strong point of the media in China.
But didn't they like it? Didn't they say this is good?
I think they
our guy is being honored this way. Is the world's sexiest man.
That was the notion. Yes, absolutely. The Onion editor, who's a guy named Will Tracy, he said The Onion fully intends to provoke international incidents. So you have to appreciate the role of The Onion in this.
Well, I occasionally retweet Onion items, and I'm always a bit concerned that people are going to think that I've taken them seriously. So hopefully the people are smarter than what they have there in China.
Ira, I am so impressed with you.
What's that?
Tweet, you read,
yes.
You write.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it never stops.
I drive a car.
No, it never stops.
Yeah, I know. Well,
but now here's the hazard of this kind of thing, the hazard of relying upon just what you see. We've referred before to the peril of just taking what's online. PR Web is an outfit that distributes press releases.
Every day.
And they distributed
so
a press release that turns out to have been fake, saying that Google was going to acquire a wireless internet provider. And it was picked up by the AP. And reported, and it turns out not to be true. But the stock plummeted, and it was a really so. The owner of PR Web has apologized, but you know they're really an outfit that purports to be distributing quote news, even press releases. It needs to be more careful.
Didn't
about
we have
that.
Somebody in the Capitol who used to do that?
Carried around press releases and so
on. Whoa.
So it's you have to be an old timer to appreciate.
Oh, then I'm not in on.
I'm avoiding lawsuits here.
Those are the days when they would actually carry around and distribute things. We loved that. So anyway, enough for old timers talking about the way things once were and for defining things by our reminiscences, alas. So that's all we'll get to today, right?
That's enough.
I'm glad to be back from Savannah, a beautiful, beautiful city.
Happy
wonderful
to see
place.
You.
I used to go out with Savannah.
I know. Did you?
Anyway, we'll see you next week.
Reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. floor. I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk. Pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers.